Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Press Coverage here live on the Going for Two Live Network. I am your host, Kyle Senra, and joining me as my guest for this episode is Andrew Erickson. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Kyle, great to be here. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm happy to chop it up with you.
Absolutely. I really enjoyed my experience meeting you at the Expo, the very first Expo back in 2019. And I've followed you since, listened to a lot of your podcasts since then, and really impressed with how you've grown, and you can see the Fantasy Pros background in the background. Once again, congrats on getting that position. We'll touch on that a little bit later, but it's great to have you on to Press Coverage.
Yeah, no, I'm super excited to be here. One of my old stomping grounds. So I'm ready to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And the first thing. Oh, yeah, there you go. I was waiting for Jamie. It was weird that Jamie wasn't in the chat and then suddenly he was there. I was thrown off. But yeah, Jamie's here rocking with this. And of course, anyone who wants to join the conversation as well can do so. On the Going for Two Live YouTube page. We're also on Facebook, Twitch as well. See videos on Twitter or X. Head over to those other platforms in order for us to see your comments so you can interact. Yeah, Jamie, I've had two great guests so far this season. This is the second episode of season four. Jamie, of course, joining as the guest for the last episode, which is fantastic. But yeah, certainly excited for this conversation as well. And I guess before we get started, I'll throw in the... pay the bills, throw in the sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. If you haven't, paid your bills with winning on Underdog Fantasy or, lost a lot of money losing in best ball drafts, the fun of drafting, though, right? That's the experience you're paying for. And you can get access to Underdog Fantasy at a reduced rate, but an extra bonus. And that is a $100 deposit match, again, up to $100. Using the promo code GF2. So if you're a new user to Underdog Fantasy, you can either use our promo code GF2 or scan the QR code you see on screen. And from there, we are going to head over to the first question. And the first question of Press Coverage is always, we start with the starting. And so where do sports start with you, Andrew? What were your first sports memories?
First sports memories, a blanket over my head, Adam Vinatieri coming in to make the kick for the Patriots against the St. Louis Rams at the time. And the Super Bowl in 2001, 2002. That's my first memory, really, just like watching that Super Bowl with my parents, being really stressed out, thinking that Adam Vinatieri was going to miss it, having no other context about what else is going on. But growing up, Boston sports were really big in my household from the Patriots. My parents put that on me when I was very young to be a Patriots fan, which was not great to start. But then obviously we got Tom Brady and now we're all privileged and now all Patriots fans complain. That's basically all we do now. So, Patriots, Red Sox, 2004 Red Sox. That was a really fun time to be like someone that was like playing baseball and watching baseball, like the Red Sox, Yankees rivalries, the players on those teams, like breaking the curse, like so much fun growing up with Boston sports. And then 2007, the Patriots, the team that the year they went undefeated, obviously lost to the Giants in the Super Bowl, but that was the first year I ever played fantasy football. So that really like unlocked another element to the game. And I, for the first time ever, I felt like invested in the team, like outside of just the games. So it's like, oh, like what are they going to do in the offseason? Like when you're invested in the team that way. So those are kind of like the three that kind of stick out the most to me when I'm thinking back about my sports memories, aside from playing different sports as a fan, really the Patriots and the Red Sox were kind of the two things that I grew up with. And now not so much with the Red Sox. It's really just mostly Patriots, especially with my job being focused on football, but the Patriots aren't good anymore. So it's like really easy to just be an analyst and be like, yep, they're bad. Let's get better versus, oh, I want my team to win. It doesn't really matter as much. So yeah, that's kind of where I got my start.
Yeah. I got to complain as a Packers fan. Now we're competitive all of a sudden. I got to stress about it. It's the worst apparently. No, it's great. It's awesome. Sorry to the fan bases that don't compete. Vikings. I guess it's interesting that championships, right? Those seem to ring true. If you've seen your team experience it, you'll sort of stick to those memories more than any other. And I guess a period of 2-3 years saw quite a few Patriots Red Sox championships.
Yeah. I mean, there's something about like, you remember what you were doing. You remember the people you were with when you were watching it, like the 28-3 Falcons game. You know, I remember where we watched that. I remember watching the Seahawks Patriots game that was overseas in London at a bar. Like, I was 19 years old. Like, it was like craziness like going on. People were shouting that had no like stake in the game whatsoever. Like, they're just there. Cause they're like, oh, Super Bowl's on. It's like 2 a.m. Like, let's party. Like they didn't care who won, but yeah, those championship runs are something that those memories I would never trade for anything.
Were you in Canada drinking in a bar at 19?
It was in London. Excuse me.
Yeah. When you said 2 a.m. I figured, okay, there's not an east enough time zone in Canada that would make sense. Yeah. For sure. Congrats on the trip to London and congrats on it being productive in the Patriots still winning. Right down to the wire too with that one. You're right, JB. Try being a Browns fan. I kind of don't want to.
Browns is depressing, especially like when you think you finally got your quarterback and it's Deshaun Watson, and like, good God.
Well, I mean, I felt like a lot of people thought they had the quarterback before that too, with Baker Mayfield, and who knows? Well, that'll turn out. And yeah, I guess to Jamie's comment though, that an Andrew Erickson versus a D-Bro cage match would be interesting. He seems to have faith in you, and Jamie does love to go on underdog fantasy, do best ball drafts, and put his money where his mouth is. So he's a reputable source.
Yeah, I mean, we did a like fantasy cage match a couple years ago. I think it was our first year at Fantasy Pros, where we were arguing Breece Hall versus Ken Walker as like the RB1 of that class. And I mean, both of the guys have been pretty good, I think, for the most part. But I mean, just looking at underdog rankings right now, Breece Hall's in round 1, and Ken Walker is not. So I'll take that as a W.
Yeah, good job. I was definitely on the Ken Walker train, so I'll accept the loss there. I was on the, before they drafted Charbonnet, that he was the Dynasty RB1, and that just did. One draft pick just sunk that ranking. Yeah,
see,
it made me look
like... We're going to get a lot of those feelings during this draft, too. That's going to happen. Get a couple sunk drafts.
It's not my first time I'll look foolish. Certainly probably won't be the last. I'll try not to be, but it'll still happen. And apparently a D-Bro would fight dirty, which does not mean he gets a good chance at winning. I don't know. I suppose part of me says, I hope we find out, but I hope we don't find out. I don't like violence, although I love football. So I'm pretty good. But yeah, we all love football. And you transitioning with your last comment from football to fantasy football, you said 2007 was your first season playing fantasy. So any Randy Moss that year to really give you the itch?
No, my team was really bad because it was the first time playing. Like, I drafted like the Bears defense like first because I thought, oh, like they were so good in 2006, like this is elite defense. Like, this is like the last, this is like the first thing you teach people in fantasy football, is like, don't ever draft defense like at all. And I was like, oh, I'm gonna draft one first. I drafted defense, Lawrence Maroney, Homer pick as a horrible running back, and Reggie Bush. Those were my first three picks. And I had like Matt Leinart. The only good pick I ever made, and I made it by accident. I drafted Calvin Johnson because I thought he was Chad Johnson. But it ended up being really, it was like Calvin Johnson's like true, like first like breakout season when he really like, because at the time, like he was still in Detroit. He like no good, like the quarterbacks were horrible. So he hadn't had that like premier season yet. But 2007, he kind of finally turned things around and started putting up big numbers. And that was like the one pick I had. And every time everyone tried to trade for him, I was like, no, like, this is my guy. Like, this is Calvin Johnson. I can't move away from him. So the one thing I do also remember from that draft was my aunt. Again, very inexperienced fantasy league. My aunt drafted Tom Brady like first overall. And we're all like making fun of her. Like, oh, like, I mean, because I couldn't make fun of the guy who picked the defense first. Right. So we're making fun of the lady that picked quarterback first. Tom Brady like literally scored more points than anybody. it wasn't even close. So.
Yeah, even with one QB draft strategy, that would have worked out. So you mentioned your aunt was in there, so family league and wanting to do a family activity. Like, who in your family approached you about that, or who had the idea? Like, was this a league that existed before 2007?
I don't think so. No, I think it was. So like, I shared the team with my dad because kind of like introducing it to me. But I think my dad and my aunts and uncles must have just like, hey, like we should do like a fantasy league, because they're all like football fans. So I remember like the draft we had at my aunt's house, and it was an in-house draft, like not using computers. I don't remember. I think it was on CBS, And yeah, I just remember it being a ton of fun. And then during the season, me and my dad like would roster the teams together. We'd make waiver wire transactions together. I remember we were very projections based. We were like, all right, how do we get the most points? So we would like make very aggressive like waiver claims because like this guy was projected to score like 0.2 more points than the other guy, which again, to this, like the projections don't mean anything. Like they're very loose in terms of like the projections. Like I would, they're hardly something I look at all anymore. But at the time I thought it was gold. I was like, oh my God, like I got to have the guy with the most projected points. Like this is easy.
Maybe not the site projections, but if you've got a reputable source that you believe in their projections, that seems like, yeah, we definitely want that edge, but
yeah,
using the same projections as everyone else.
Yeah, that's like not optimal, but that was something I was always like very gung-ho on. I was like, all right, no, we need to have the most projected points. Even if we have to cut this guy, don't care. And then the one waiver wire pickup I made that was like super key. I remember my uncle was really pissed about it because the guy had sucked on his team. He dropped him and I picked him up and then he was just turned into a monster, was Marquise Colston. In 2007. So the former seventh round pick, tight end, converted wide receiver for Drew Brees and the Saints. I don't know. He just turned into a monster. And I was like, sick.
You would have had the Colston Reggie Bush stack.
Exactly. Yeah, the Saints stack before stacking was even cool. So, you know, I was light years ahead of him. I was destined to be in this role that I have now, essentially.
Well, again, you can tell your podcast host. That's like two perfect transitions. This one will actually capture it though. And say, now that you're with Fantasy Pros, take us back to how you started in fantasy football content creation and how it's led you to your position now.
Yeah, so I graduated college in 2016. And after that, I was just kind of looking for a job. I had a marketing degree. So in the downtime, I would do fantasy research because I thought it was fun. I had like a WordPress website that I just like started on my own. It's like Fantasy Football Master or something like that. And I would just like kind of write stuff like for no reason, just kind of like for myself to kind of just, it was like at the time it was like David Johnson, Todd Gurley, like those were like the top tier, Le'Veon Bell, like those were the top tier running backs. I talked about like those types of running backs. And then eventually I met Mitchell Renz, who I worked with in my real life job at the time in 2017. And he introduced me to Gridiron Experts as a website where you could write fantasy articles. I was like, oh, this is cool. It's like, yeah, like I'll help you get settled, like set up. I'll connect you with the owner of the site, Mike Riggs. And that's how I kind of landed my first like fantasy gig. And I remember to this day, the first fantasy article I ever wrote was Julius Thomas when he was, I think, either traded or signed with the Miami Dolphins. And I was like, this is not a good landing spot for him. And I was right. So I was on top of the world. Julius Thomas was a bust on Miami. I mean, Julius Thomas basically had one good season with Denver. I mean, he caught like 18 touchdowns, and I don't think he did everything. I don't think he did anything else since that. But I was
the
right.
Year where Peyton Manning threw like 55, right? So
yeah.
Of course he scored.
Peyton Manning threw 7 touchdowns in like the season opener. It's like, oh my God,
yeah, that's true.
This guy's back. So yeah, that was the first article I wrote for Gridiron Experts, and then from there I just kind of fell in love with doing content from a written perspective. So I tried to pick up other gigs. So Full Press Coverage was a site that I wrote for, Gridiron Experts, and then Fantasy Data as I started to get more and more involved with fantasy content. And eventually I landed my first full-time job 4 years ago, really in the height of COVID in 2020 with PFF, which I had been doing work for, not specifically fantasy, but like PFF, like charting. Like I had been doing some of that stuff for them because I just wanted to get my foot in the door with a company that I knew had an opportunity for more. So that's what I did with PFF. And then the last 2 years, I've been lucky enough to be at Fantasy Pro. So that's kind of my story of where I started basically, since 2016, 2017. So not quite to 10 years yet, but kind of getting up there as I approach my age 30 season here in May. I'll be turning 30. I saw my first white hair the other day in the mirror. So that was very depressing. But you know, starting to get old, but I'm still kicking.
Yeah, I can see quite a few on this beard now. I'll keep it. The downside of the beard is more spots to see. The hat won't cover it all. That's okay. Embrace it. Full Press Coverage. I'm writing there and podcasting there. I don't think, believe by the time I joined, you had already moved on. But it's funny that we met the very first Fantasy Football Expo. You mentioned a few things. Like I remember, thought I was pretty sure you mentioned the PFF charting. So when you said it now, I definitely rang the bell. And then the fact that you were at Full Press Coverage and we were have that commonality of both having worked for Ian Glendon. So shout out to Ian. Also shout out to Jeff for this show too. So my two bosses, I guess. gotta support both. And yeah, well, you know what? And to be fair, maybe that's my time for a good transition because Ian and Jeff have both been very influential on me. But Andrew, who have been some of the biggest influences in your life? And this doesn't have to necessarily just be about fantasy football, although we do find fantasy football important. It's a big part of our lives.
Yeah. So again, I mentioned at the top, you know, Mitchell Renz was someone that introduced me to like fantasy as like a content space. Like he kind of like, he invited me to my first Twitter share group for fantasy football, which was, I mean, totally bizarre. It was like people just like write articles and share them in here. So like, I don't even know if any of those people exist anymore. Don't know, but whatever. So shout out to him. Mike Riggs was the first person that obviously was able to land me a job with Gridiron Experts, my first place that I wrote articles. So always thankful for those guys' influences on where I've made my career at this point. My parents, I mentioned them, you know, playing in a fantasy league with my dad was very influential. My mom is actually like the more diehard football fan out of my mom and dad. So she's beat it into me to be a Patriots fan. And as it's been tough for the last couple of years, I mean, obviously being into football has obviously made it this a dream come true for me. Like to be full-time in the industry working and talking about fantasy football is my career. Like that's something that I'm just truly blessed to do. Super excited to do it. Wake up really excited every single day to get to work and kind of see what the day unfolds. So my parents, and then last but not least, so Mike Tagliere, obviously passed away a couple of years ago, no longer with Fantasy Pros, but I got to interact with him and meet with him on a couple different occasions, whether it was at some of the expos, offsites. It was actually, I got to meet him in Nashville because I knew he was there for one of the NFL drafts, I believe it was the 2019 NFL draft with Kyler Murray. And I met Tags there and got the opportunity to just like pick his brain about certain things. Like at the time, again, I wasn't at PFF yet at that time. I was just trying to pick his brain about like, what do I have to do to get into the industry? How do I break in? And he just really offered a lot of great advice and confidence and someone that I knew I could go to and ask questions about, like, what's it like to work in the industry? Like, what are salary expectations? Like, how do you know your worth? Like, that matters, especially in a field like fantasy where it's a lot, like, you can't just like go on Glassdoor and be like, right, fantasy football analyst salary, what is that? Like, it's a very, like, complicated, like, it's not, you can't just find on Glassdoor, essentially. It's not like a marketing job or an administrative job. It's very niche. Even as the content continues to grow, especially with betting now, also kind of another layer on to the fantasy side of things, which I love. Again, giving us more avenues to talk about fantasy and football from different perspectives. I absolutely love that. And that's something that I've also have enjoyed doing the last year, really. I'm from Massachusetts. If you couldn't tell with all my Patriots love, from Massachusetts, still live here now. And they just legalized sports gambling last year. So that's something that I've been able to kind of take part in for the first time. And it's kind of like opened my eyes to other aspects of how you can digest football and how you can analyze and look and watch the game. And that's been really fun for me. So, yeah. So those are some of my main influences. Again, there's many more people that have been influential to me. My fiance, wife will be in June. So super excited yes. about that. But she's been very, I mean, it's not easy to, you know, because I had to basically reset my career at a point in 2020 to go work at PFF, take less money to kind of chase my dream. And not everyone is always about that or has to be supportive about that. Like you're sacrificing money and it's like, well, is she going to wait for me? And not to say that, I mean, we had some tough conversations. I'll just leave it at that. Like we had tough conversations, but I knew at the time it was like, this is my shot to kind of go after it. And I got to go full force. And she was lucky. And our relationship was at a point where she was behind me 110%. And you know, that's when I knew. That's when I knew she was the one for me. So, but.
Well, congratulations. And I'm glad we got you on now and not like in June where things are going to be really busy. So
good. Oh, no, exactly. And that's why she's like, oh, do you want to get married in June or September? I'm like, Let's do June. That sounds good.
Yeah. So not July and August. Those are out of it. Yeah. We're out of it. Kind of warm, but not too warm. And my wife and I, we got married in September. So you definitely understand that sentiment. You know, Jamie stated a statement that I've heard echoed a ton. But just talking about Mike Tagliere, what an awesome guy he was. Jamie says he took time out of his day to give me personal advice via messages. And I feel like I'm going to have to read that from Jamie. I'm sure everyone has that same sentence in mind. It seemed like he was put an emphasis on the fact that he was creating content for people, and the people who were either listening to the podcast or just following him on Twitter, it made it seem like he really thought it was important to give back to all of them just with time, like Jamie's saying, giving the time to make detailed messages and really excellent feedback. Because I don't know if you get a ton of fantasy football questions, but it feels like the best way to answer people's questions is with more questions. Okay, unless the first message is so detailed that it has everything you need to know about it. But generally, okay, if I'm going to go dive into this, I'm going to need to know these few things. And I guess that's also part of the content creation space, but also understanding like who are the people that are doing that and are being detailed. If they're asking you questions to your questions, that means they really do care. It feels like Tags was definitely like that. Everyone who's ever talked about Mike Tagliere has never said a single bad word. It seems like he was just the nicest person, and that was just his genuine way of being. So it wasn't really effort for him to just be as super nice and generous with his time as possible, because it just seems like that's who he was.
For sure.
So some great people you mentioned in terms of your influences. And I was going to say something else. I forgot it. But you know what? It's better to talk with Mike Tagliere than whatever random silly idea I was going to come up with. I guess we'll just get to the next question, which is, your favorite hobbies outside of football or outside of fantasy football and the stuff you do with fantasy pros and betting pros. You can bet on it. Sure. That those stuff keep you busy, but
yeah. So for me, other hobbies, I like lifting weights. I like exercising in general. I think that kind of just like, that's my go-to part of my daily routine, whether it's lifting weights, cycling, getting outside. I mean, it's been like 70 degrees here today in Boston. It's been like fantastic. It's like, my body's like, I have to go outside. Like, it's like non-negotiable. Like, need to get outside some way when we come out of the winter, which is always horrible. So I hate New England, but it makes you appreciate the times when it is nice out. Cause you're like, we don't get these all the time. It's probably going to rain tomorrow. So we got to take advantage of it now. Outdoors, I like that. And then comes like media. I mean, like everybody else, I like movies, I like TV, video games. At this age, I don't like to necessarily go out and like club necessarily unless it's like a bachelor party. So I like going to breweries, tasting craft beers. I'm not a huge IPA guy, but I've been told by many IPA experts that you just got to keep trying them. You know, just like riding a bike, you can't give up. Eventually, you'll find one that kind of sticks and be like, okay, like this isn't bad. So trying to be more open-minded to IPAs, even though I don't like them. More of a sours, stouts, everything else basically except IPAs, but that's kind of something I like to do, like go to a craft brewery. There's a lot of nice ones in around the Boston area. And it's something I like to do with my friends, like chilling on a Saturday, nice day, I don't have a dog, but if I had a dog, I'd get the dog. We go to a craft brewery. We chill outside in the sun, have a sour, talk football. Yeah. That's like an ideal Saturday for me. And with some food, ideally a taco truck.
I mean, if you really wanted, you could like buy a leash and pretend to have a dog. It's an invisible dog.
My dog that I would have if I could have one. Can't have one.
It's invisible.
Now.
It's an invisible dog. Don't step on him.
His name is Casper, the dog.
Perfect. There you go. And then there's no need to explain any further than that. But you might have to explain a little bit on this. What is something that people in the fantasy community don't know about you and that you're willing to share?
So I think that, I don't think everyone knows. I know some of my closer coworkers know this, but I mentioned I'm into lifting. So I used to be a competitive bodybuilder very early on in my 20s. So I was into the training, the cutting, the losing the weight, the six meals a day, all that stuff, the posing, the speedo, all that stuff. Did all of it. Have no interest in doing it anymore right now, but I've also lost a significant amount of weight since those days, like 30 pounds, which, glad it's in that direction versus the other direction, to be honest. I'd rather lose weight, so I can always get it back, especially as I get older. So, yeah, but I was just, that was all I did. And when I look back at some of those pictures, I'm like, man, just like where did that part of my body go? I'm just like, it's like my, like, especially my like trunk area. So like my shoulders, my neck area was just like so thick. And it's like, oh my God, like, I was yolk sauce. Like, essentially, is like what I'm looking at. So again, you know, reflecting on it, it's like, man, but that's all I did. I was like, I went to work and ate food and went to the gym. Like, that's literally all I did. I did nothing else except eat, lift, and go to work. And that was it. And now, obviously, I do other things. So,
and if you're doing fantasy football at the time, you would have been, and this is shout out to Jamie, who sometimes contributes for them, but you'd have been a true fantasy six pack for the opposite reason of what they're saying with the beers. Although,
yeah. Enjoy the brews. So, Jamie's saying that he knew that I was a bodybuilder. So, I've already been outed.
So, Joe apparently
Joe
gave that away in part of the the debate. So, which again, Jamie hinted at earlier. So that's very, very clairvoyant of Jamie to know.
But
that
again, the thing with bodybuilders you have to keep in mind is we just look strong. We're not actually strong.
And to be fair, being strong and knowing how to fight are two different things as well.
That's also true.
Yeah. I don't know how to. Also,
I don't know how to fight. That should be full disclosure. I don't know how to fight either. So not only am I not strong anymore, I also don't know how to fight. So. Take that with what you will.
Maybe I will take Jamie up on that bet. Again, betting pros. Yeah, you know all about it. But I guess we'll talk about the fantasy football questions now. And of course, the fun part of the episode. We love fantasy. But what is your preferred league format for fantasy football?
Superflex. I just think that it adds that extra layer that you want with quarterbacks. I think quarterback streaming is kind of like, so it's like an easy way to approach it. And I think that Superflex makes that you can't do that anymore. Like, you actually have to draft good quarterbacks and like enter the draft with a strategy. And then with like scoring, I mean, best ball for me. Like, I'm so over like having good guys go off on my bench. Like, that just sucks for everybody. Like, but if it's best ball, like, you get those points, like, you get credit. Like, I should be rewarded because I have this guy on my bench. Like, and it's not because, oh, well, we should have started him. It's like, well, what if my entire team is stacked? Like, it's not my fault I have too many good players. Like, I shouldn't be penalized for having such a good team. You know what I mean? And I guess, like, you could look at it as, like, well, if your team is all good, like, it doesn't matter who you start. It's like, that's fair. But when a guy rips off an 80-yard touchdown, and I know he's on my bench because I couldn't start him, but I knew he was good, like, I want to get points for that. So, best ball, I think that's, especially with, like, being in, like, a bazillion different leagues, best ball is, I really don't join leagues anymore that aren't best ball specifically.
And I guess that goes for both redraft and dynasty. If you do,
yeah, especially dynasty. I think dynasty best ball drafts are really underrated because it helps you just hyper focus on the draft, like off season moves, trades, which is like the fun part of dynasty versus like, oh, I got to set my lineup. That's like kind of the least favorite thing about fantasy, I think, at times. Like, it takes time. It can be annoying. Like you said, like you're tilting your face off because you started the wrong guy. It's like, the maneuvers, the transactions, the manager mode is actually like the fun part. So, and drafting the team.
I actually do like setting lineups, but I'm a weirdo like that.
Stop, Kyle. Stop. No one does. You can't tell me you like going through all 12 of your teams Sunday morning and be like, this is fun.
I usually do it Saturday to make it more fun. Okay. That way I'm not as rushed and pressured. Sunday morning I find is usually just for, okay, that's where making sure like everyone's playing, but I've usually every decision I'm making Sunday morning, I've already thought through on a Saturday. I have no life, so
I'm still trying to recover.
Fantasy stuff extends from Sunday morning through.
I'm still trying to recover from all my my sours that I've drank during the day, so I don't have time to get to that. By Saturday night, I'm out by 7 p.m. Gotta get up early for Sunday morning for the Adam Schefter bomb with like the 12,000 guys he talks about being injured.
Yeah, that's true. And then we can all talk about what he said on all our shows Sunday mornings on our streams. Yeah, 25 plus teams. It's annoying. What are you saying, Jamie? Starting lineups? Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, yeah. When you get a certain number, it becomes more of a choice. I mean, like Tuesday nights for me, it's like, sorry, babe, can't hang out. Got to hit waivers. Like
I do
like,
find like, waivers to be more tedious than setting lineups because to me, lineups. Okay, like waivers, I could literally have to go through every player. Whereas at least lineups, okay, this is the team I just have to make from these decisions.
Yeah, it's more
like drafting. Yeah. I kind of find an extension of drafting, like you're. Make one decision to roster the player, you got to make another decision to start them every week. So kind of always taking that in stride. But yeah, it seems like I'm definitely the weirdo of the group that loves setting lineups. So best ball is clearly maybe this answer for this, but is there anything else in terms of a rule that you feel you must have in your league?
Well, part of this kind of goes into what I've been talking about, like I multiple flexes. So like, okay, you don't have to necessarily go all best ball, but I want to start more players so I don't have to run into situations where I can't start all the players I want. So I think that is a way. So like, if you don't want to move to all best ball for your leagues, just add more flexes. Like, why do we have all these bench spots? That's lame. Like, score more points. More points is fun. More players is fun. Get credit for your points. Like, I'd rather have all starting positions like two bench spots than like eight bench spots and four start, like whatever. Like, start more guys.
Eight and eight, like if it was a true.
Yeah. So yeah, I like less. I like deep rosters, but it's like I want more guys I can start every single week. Now, the only issue it comes with is like bye weeks, but everybody has to deal with it. And I think it's kind of fun. It's like, oh, I gotta start this random guy on a bye week, like fingers crossed. And then if he goes off, you feel like a genius. You're like, let's go. So,
and the idea of okay, especially if the bench isn't so deep, that you have tough decisions to make. Do I keep this player or not?
Yeah.
That can also, again, making decisions, forcing managers to make decisions, I think, is never a bad thing. Jamie's saying start 11 and 12 compared to start 8 and 9. I'll agree with that. Anything double-digit number of starters, I think, is where I'd like to be, ideally. Agreed. Especially fewer teams. Like, I've got a 10-team league, and we start 12, and that doesn't feel, because there's only 10 of us, doesn't feel like that's too much. Like, we could even go to 13 or even 14. Still.
Yeah, the last thing you want is like waivers to just be like loaded. Like, that's like, yeah.
There's no incentive for anyone to kind of bid on any player if they know that, oh, I just pick up for free tomorrow an amazing player. Like,
right.
You also don't want it to be too sparse to where it's meaningless. Like, there's no one good at all. Like, and that sometimes happens more in Dynasty than it will in redraft. In Dynasty, you get that where waivers are almost meaningless. So, like, you really, like, it does make those rookie picks, though. That's the only way you can add players to your team, because you rarely ever can pick up anyone of note. But the next few players we're talking about, I guess, could be considered a waiver wire pickups at some point. But who are your all-time fantasy QB1, RB1, wide receiver 1, and tight end 1?
All right, so we'll go rapid fire here. So Cam Newton, quarterback for me. His MVP season was just electric. So I remember drafting him as my backup that year. And God, he was much more than a backup. Jamal Charles, just, I had him in a ton of teams, kind of got onto him like before he like hit that massive stretch of season where he was unstoppable. Calvin Johnson, mentioned him earlier. Felt like I was an earlier adopter of Calvin Johnson. So special place in my heart for Megatron. And then a tight end. I mean, obviously, again, you could talk about Gronk or Travis Kelce more recent, but like for me, it was always like Antonio Gates. This is like, he was the tight end. Like every year, I was like, oh, like when are you going to draft Antonio Gates for? Like, when are you going to draft Antonio Gates? So, like, I know that most people, like, especially the younger audience, is like, it's always been Travis Kelce is like the tight end one. Before that, like Antonio Gates, like he had a stretch where he was always tight end one. So that would be my Mount Rushmore, I think, QB receiver, running back, and tight end.
Yeah, I've never heard anyone describe it as the Mount Rushmore, but there are four players, so it actually fits perfectly.
I was hoping that Mount, I was like, wait, Mount Rushmore has four people, right? I was like, oh my God, did I just mess up? I was like, do I need to add a kicker? Oh my God, no, a defense.
They can always add another face on, too. I suppose you could remove a face, not to deface Mount Rushmore. But it's, you know, there's a stretch, I guess, between 2011 and 2015 where you could have had that entire team on your roster. Cam Newton, Jamal Charles, Calvin Johnson, and Antonio Gates. And like, I wonder if the rounds would have worked out some of those years where you actually could have legit drafted all four of them and had them on a team.
Wow.
I don't know. Do you remember ever having all four of them?
I mean, I don't think so. That'd be sick, though, if I could find that team.
All right, the dream team. I guess your version of the dream team.
My version of the dream team. Not that Eagles dream team. That team sucked.
Funny, because I was just thinking about that the other day.
Well, that was the thing that was funny about that was it was Vince Young, who was the backup quarterback, that said it was the dream team. Not even a guy that starts, but it's like, we're so good. If our starting quarterback goes down, I'll come in and we'll be nasty. And it's like, couldn't have been farther from the truth.
I mean, I'm pretty sure they made the playoffs. They were a 10-win team, I think.
I don't think they were. I thought they were a disaster.
See, I thought it was 2010, the 2010 season, and they actually won the division, but then lost in the wild card round to the Packers. I thought that was
the next year that they were the dream team. I feel like that was the year that they were the dream team because they like reloaded. Because it was, I remember because I was obsessed with taking Michael Vick like so high in fantasy because all I could think about when someone asked me about Michael Vick and the Eagles was that Monday night game against the Washington at the time Redskins. And Vic just opened up with an 80-yard touchdown to DeSean Jackson on Monday night. It was like, oh my God, this guy's unstoppable. And then he was horrible the next year. So,
Okay, yeah, because I guess I fondly remember the Dream Team, because every time I hear the Dream Team, I think of how it ended. Oh, yeah, to the Packers en route to their Super Bowl.
Yeah,
maybe I just misremember I can think of the Packers winning a Super Bowl when I think of the Dream Team. Great, great, good job, Brandon. Way to misassociate there. Apparently, Jamie used to associate with Antonio Gates. They went to college together at Kent State. So Jamie, once an episode, will throw in some like crazy life story. Usually they're pretty like wild. This is a tame life story, but it's pretty incredible. So kudos to you, Jamie. The Jamie saga continues even after his press coverage episode last week. He hasn't revealed all. Stay tuned. Every Going for Two Live episode, which is basically every night of the week, Jamie's in there commenting, and he'll always throw something crazy wild that's just worth just to watch the comments, not even the great content that, of course, is on screen and coming through the microphone. But yes, we get to the high five section of the show. So Andrew's top five players, or it's not top, we just did players, top five for five different categories. And so we're going to start off the high fives with top five artists or bands.
All right. So this is a pretty diverse group, because I just like a lot of different types of music. So Blink 182, AC/DC, Justin Bieber, The Clash, and Duran Duran. So it's pretty much all over the place, but I have a very diverse music palette, and I listen to different music depending on what I'm doing, my mood, and yeah, I try to embrace all types of music.
I mean, technically three of those bands would be considered punk bands, but yet even within the punk rock sphere, they do sound quite different all three mm-hmm. of each other. To be honest, I love The Clash, and I love how they kind of they set the standard for a lot of different things that come with, again, the punk rock territory. And like they were in on the sort of reggae ska stuff right from their first album. And then when the 90s hit and punk rock kind of became a thing, they also started associated with the ska reggae scene. Like both those scenes kind of became a thing. But like, man, The Clash was doing that like almost 20 years before. So well ahead of their time, but they were also pretty successful in their own times. People could appreciate just how good they were. And yes, I call it every Canadian on the show. I was hoping to avoid this one, but Jamie inevitably mentioned that Justin Bieber is Canadian. He and I are from the same country. Just kidding. I like some of his songs. Yeah, clearly Andrew loves Justin Bieber. So yeah, very, very diverse. And also diverse from the times, right? Like you're talking 80s with Duran Duran, even 70s with The Clash and even AC/DC, to some artists that have come out in the post-millennium. So yeah. It's great. I love hearing people with diverse set of musical tastes, because I feel like even like I think of like punk rock versus metal. Now I love both those scenes, but it's crazy to me that back in the day they would almost like despise each other, especially in the 70s, 80s. The metal heads would diss the punk rockers. Hey, you guys barely play your instruments. And then the punk rockers, it's like all you do is ride around on bikes or whatever they would say about them. It's pretty. That's not really that great of an insult. Sounds pretty badass. Oh, you're just a cool biker. Oh, wait, I didn't insult him there. But the whole idea of like, you can only like metal or punk, I always thought was strange. And then expand that further. It's not just rock versus everything else. It's, man, we can enjoy all sorts of different music. It's all about the harmony and wanting to be in harmony with what we're listening to, but also, I guess, what we're reading. So, Andrew, what are your top five books?
So I like, I don't really read a ton. A lot of stuff I read is actually like self-help books, or more like self-improvement books. So some of the ones I read recently, Why We Sleep, Atomic Habits, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Bleep. I really enjoyed that book. So those are kind of like the self-help books that I've read recently that I felt like had really good messages about the ways that you can improve your life and do certain things and approach things differently. As opposed to like more like novels, like, I mean, Harry Potter, I've read all the books. I enjoyed reading all the books. I remember my dad went to one of the midnight openings for a book. Like, imagine that, like a midnight opening for a book. But he did. So, and then,
do you remember which book?
I think he actually did for both of them. I think it was like the fifth and sixth books. Cause I felt like there was like a gap in time between the first four books and then books 5, 6, and 7. Yeah, because there's two deaths.
There's eight movies, but only seven books.
Yeah, seven books. So, yeah. And that was when I was like elementary school, middle school. The Fantasy Black Book, also a great read. Shout out to Joe Pisapia for setting that up every year. And then my last thing, I guess I'm cheating a little bit because it's a comic book, or it's a comic strip. It's Calvin and Hobbes. It was a sucker for Calvin and Hobbes growing up, and to this day, like, I have like a stack of them in my office, and I just like every once in a while I'll kind of peek over and just like want a little chuckle that's not coming from social media. Calvin and Hobbes, that'll give it to you.
You get the same chuckles as social media, maybe not as much grief.
Exactly.
Much less risky proposition.
Without the chance of any type of doom scrolling. No chance of doom scrolling when you're just reading Calvin and Hobbes.
Unless the comics about them doom scrolling. I don't know if they got that far into their development. But yes, honestly, did Jamie answer Fantasy Black Book on his episode? I know that was just a month ago. But yeah, Jamie, I definitely love asking all these questions to people just to see what media's mediums and media people like. But we'll go with top five movies now.
Yeah, so I only have three. I was doing this off the cuff like yesterday when I was kind of preparing, and I was like, I couldn't really think of any that were like deserving of my top five. So I probably do have other ones, but for now I'll just list the ones that I, to me, are just very iconic. So 21 Jump Street with Jonah Hill. Love that movie. Shrek. I'm a Shrek head. I think it's a great movie. And then The Dark Knight is by far my, like, I don't even really think it's a superhero movie. I think it's like, it's so much better as just like a film. Like, I don't even like classify it really as like a superhero movie per se, even though it is Batman. I feel like it offers so much. So The Dark Knight. So that's three. And I feel like every other movie kind of just falls into like a trickle of movies. Like, it'd be like 4 through 20 would be my next top option. So, but those three kind of separate themselves a little bit for me.
Fantasy pros rank here, but also understanding that tiers are probably more important than rankings.
Hell yeah.
And to be fair, all three of those movies that you mentioned are part of series, so you could easily just say, okay, Shrek 2 is in there, and then Batman Begins, there you go, there's five. And all fantastic series, to be honest. But to your point with Dark Knight, I've often said it's the best superhero movie, but it almost feels like it does transcend the genre.
Yeah, it's a great, like, it's not
genre action movie.
Yeah, I really think it's like, yeah, I feel like it can be grouped together with like not, because it's hard to break out of that. Like, if you're a superhero movie, like, you're clumped together with every other superhero movie. That's what you're compared to. Makes sense. But just the fact that there's like nobody even has superpowers in that movie. Like, I think it's just great.
Jamie's also got a sixth sense for this, because he did mention you when talking about the Black Book. Yeah, that's true. Obviously, you mentioned Joe, and Joe's created this for so many years, but I think you went through like some of the people who contribute, and I do believe your name was mentioned. Yep. And I either transitioned that to say, oh, Andrew's coming on next month, or I didn't. I can't remember which happened. I'm going to assume I did, just to pat myself on the back, but it probably wasn't. I tried to focus as much as I could. But I guess we'll get to top five game day foods.
Yeah, so we're going to go with wings, buffalo chicken dip, tacos/nachos. So just like some type of Mexican du jour, sliders, and sausage and peppers as like a one component dish.
That almost sounds like it could be like a complete like potluck kind of meal, and it would all go well together.
Yeah, I have a limited stomach space. It's like, all right, we got to figure out how to do this optimally. And that's why I like tacos and sliders specifically, because they're smaller versions of like larger entrees, essentially. But you can get different flavors and tastes of it in just smaller increments. So it helps you get more flavor. So it's like, oh, like, this place has a bunch of good burgers, but I can only get one. Well, if you order sliders, you can try each type of burger in a small, same thing with tacos. So that's why I like love those like smaller finger foods.
Especially if you're going to a place for the first time before you commit to, okay, I'm just going to get this one thing. That does make sense. A lot of logic there. Well thought out. And we'll finish with top five, going from game day to video games. That transition didn't seem as smooth as I thought it would. smoothly get into this. Andrew, what are your top five favorite video games?
Yeah, so I didn't even really think about this one. I just like went for the first five that came to my mind. So I know I'm probably forgetting one that's like super iconic to me, but it unfortunately didn't make the list. But I do have five. So Mario Kart, Pokemon, Guitar Hero, Madden, and Smash Brothers, or Super Smash Brothers. So like those five franchises, probably 50% of my childhood, at least, if not more. So like, for example, I didn't say Mario Party. Like that would probably be one that would be like six, one of the next ones. And I mean, when you look at this list, is there anything that you think I'd be missing? Like I didn't really play a lot of Call of Duty when I was growing up, so that wouldn't be on it for me. But like Guitar Hero, like played that game so much, so much Madden, of course, the football background. And then from the Nintendo franchises, like those were the three I definitely played the most.
It also seems like you got a good variety. You got a sports game, a silly racing game, because I just want to say it's like a super like a racing game that takes itself too seriously.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of fun with everything, which makes Mario Kart so fun. It almost like transcends the racing game genre, almost for the opposite reason of why Dark Knight transcends the comic book genre. Both are excellent, though. Yeah, Jamie loves Mario Kart too. So I don't know if there's anything missing. I was actually going to dive further into, because some of those are series as well. Like Madden, did you ever have a favorite version of Madden? Do you ever think there was a year they captured something they never were able to reproduce?
Yeah, no, the first Madden game I ever had was Madden 05. The introduction of the hit stick. Ray Lewis was on the cover. And I remember it was kind of like the first moment that I realized I liked football. It like connected in my head. We were at recess and my school, so I must have been like, I think I was like in fifth grade or fourth grade, and it was like a snow day, so we couldn't use like the playground. So basically, instead of us like going on the playground, they just sent us out into like the parking lot to just like gallivant or whatever and do whatever, you know, fifth graders and fourth graders do. So someone brought a football, right? And so people were playing football, and I just started playing with them. It's the first time I played, and nobody was covering me because they didn't see me as a threat, right? But what they didn't know is I actually had hands, and I just kept catching everything because no one covered me, because the quarterback was like, I'll throw it to Andrew. And I was like, sick. And then the next day, so same thing. So I'm like, I'm all hyped up. I'm like, oh, it's gonna be sick. So we're doing the same thing. Next day they cover me though. I'm like, damn, I need to get some more moves. So like I convinced my parents, like, Mom, Dad, like, I need to learn more about football. Like, let's go get Madden. So that was like the first Madden game I got after an experience. Like in the
well
schoolyard.
Sold on why, like, because your parents love football, so
yeah,
I want to learn with this video game.
Yeah, I want to learn with this video game, and I mean, yeah, no. I definitely logged like so many hours in franchise mode with that game, like to a point where I'm sure other people that have played enough Madden, where like you've done a franchise for so long that none of the actual players are even left. You're just like onto all like create players that the game just automatically generates like every single season when you do a draft. And yeah, like Madden 05 for me, GameCube, Ray Lewis was on the cover, and yeah, definitely the most iconic. And again, I played other ones, had other versions, but that one was definitely the most iconic to me. And I remember I would miss so many tackles because I would just use the hit stick all the time. But I was like, I'd rather miss 15 tackles than miss an opportunity to blow up this quarterback or blow up this, like, especially with the graphics back then, when you would deplete somebody, they would like friggin' flip over and their arms would bend backwards in ways that no human body should ever move.
Thank God it's just a video game.
Yeah, right. So but yeah, Madden 05 was 05. My go-to.
Yeah, nice. Jamie says Madden 07. Like I played the, again, Canadian, so I played the NHL games, and I got NHL 2003. It wasn't the first one I had gotten. At that point I thought it was the best, and then okay, I think a couple of years later, I bought 2005, and I hated it. I was like, you know what? Forget this. I'm never going to buy another one. I'm just going to play 2003. So I found, like, I find that with sports games, there's always one that, for various reasons, will stick out for people. And yeah, so let's go far back with, oh, I haven't made a good one in 20 years now. 21 years. I'm going to yell at that cloud angrily. But no. This was no anger here, because this was a fantastic episode, Andrew. Thank you very much. I know Jeff loves to tease that I make these go like an hour and a half sometimes because I just babble on. We're not even at 50 minutes yet. We're about to hit 50. It'll be under an hour, though, so Jeff will be happy. Dan can stop teasing me. You don't have to be too long away from your fiance. So everyone's happy here. Hope you enjoyed this, Andrew.
No, this was a great time. I love kind of coming on here and getting the chance to chop it up with someone that I've met from the past and talk about, you know, old times, talk about my journey, reflect on it, and be like, man, like I made it this far. I want to keep going. So super happy, super pumped that you brought me on. I love the questions too. The top five ringer at the end, elite way to end a show. So keep that up, Kyle. And yeah, looking forward to the NFL draft. Are you also Canadian? Is that what you were saying? Or is it just James?
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Where in Canada do you live?
So I live in Sudbury, Ontario.
Ontario. Okay, cool. I'm going to Canada at the beginning of May. I'm going to Montreal, but...
Yeah, Canada. A lot of people in Quebec may not want to admit it, but it's in Canada. but yeah, cool. Yeah, Montreal's... I've actually never been to Montreal.
Okay.
But everyone who goes says how amazing it is, so I'm sure you'll have...
I heard that they got good poutine. Is that how I pronounce it? Whatever.
Sin. You got the first part right, at least. But yeah. If you say poutine, they'll be really impressed with you.
Poutine. So, okay.
Yeah. I'm ready. If you say it like that, they'll still give it to you anyway. If you pronounce it the other way, but they'll be happier to take your money and sell it to you. But yeah, so apparently Jamie thinks it's the best press coverage episode so far this year.
Boom.
Episode 2 this year.
Love that.
Jamie's being self-deprecating because, again, he was the guest on the last episode. I thought both were fantastic. So I can't decide. It's like deciding your favorite... favorite fantasy teams, but favorite child or favorite team build or favorite league win. I know actually the part of it is, okay, we found out on the episode, it was really good to bring you on this time of year, not June when you're getting married, but I also kind of wanted to do it before the NFL draft and just to end with a slight humble brag. Jeff doesn't do this anymore, but he used to do a DFS contest for the NFL draft. And each player would be priced a certain amount of money. You had to kind of build a team, and based on how high they went in the draft, you got certain points from them. The last year he did it, you and I actually ended up being co-champions.
Oh, yeah. I was like, wait, I remember this. Yeah.
Larry Roundtree getting drafted.
Oh, yeah.
Last day tied me for you. Otherwise, if Larry Roundtree went undrafted, I think you would have won it, and I wouldn't. You would have had it solo, and I wouldn't have. So.
Still the highlight of Larry Roundtree's career.
Yeah, help me win that one, or co-win that one draft DFS thing that was for charity. I don't believe he has won any money on it, but it was cool to. I'm competitive, so I just love winning. So that's why I was wanted to brag about it anyway. But yeah, I thought, you know what, let's talk about it. And because the NFL draft's coming up, are you doing anything for Fantasy Pros during the NFL draft?
Yeah, so Fantasy Pros, myself, other analysts, Joe, Thor, D-Bro, the whole kick and caboodle, the whole gang, we're all doing 2 nights of live streams. So basically, Thursday night, 8 p.m., or kicking off things at 7 p.m., draft starts at 8 p.m., going live all night long, talking about the picks. Joe and Thor are going to be on the entire time. It's going to be me and Derek kind of like rotating in and out as we give each other, do some of the stuff behind the scenes. So yeah. Live stream over on the Fantasy Pros YouTube channel. And then when we're not on the channel itself, we'll be chiming into the YouTube channel with comments, kind of just like, you know, pushing the bear, especially depending on where JJ McCarthy goes, because that's Thor's guy and he really wants him to be a Minnesota Viking, but who knows? He may be a New England Patriot when it's all said and done. So we don't know. Excited about it. But yeah, that's where we're going to be on Thursday night, Friday night, and then Saturday. I'm going to be working on my draft guide. Or the draft grades, excuse me. I'm going to be all draft out by then, but draft grades. And then Sunday is my fiance's bridal shower. So it's a jam-packed 4 days. I'm going to be just dedicated to football all Saturday. I'd be like, hey, I have to work on Saturday, but don't worry. Like, I'll be focused for Sunday for the shower, even though all I do is show up with flowers. It's not all that I do, but it's a big part of the job.
Don't tell her that. You got to make it seem more important.
Don't worry. She only listens to some of the shows that I'm on. So we should be good.
Yeah, 53 minutes in, she might not go right to the end if she watches this one.
But yeah, no, super excited about the NFL content. So yeah, it's over on fantasypros.com. Betting pros, we're going to be doing our favorite bets for the NFL draft as well. So it's all going to be featured. So I would subscribe now anywhere you get your podcasts. And yeah, go subscribe on the YouTube channel as well. So you set that notification so you know when we go live.
Awesome. And going for 2 Live, we'll also be doing some stuff draft day, but not to compete with what Fantasy Pros is saying. I'll just plug the Saturday show, which I'll be hosting probably from last year. We started at 12 noon and went till, I think, basically Brian Ford actually ended up finishing the show along Josh. They basically went right into Dynasty Saturday Night 5 show, which they normally do Saturday night. It basically turned out to an extended episode of that. So it was several hours on Saturday, but yeah, of course, we'll be doing some things on Thursday and Friday as well. But yeah. Watch Saturday, because that's when everything, we'll know everything. Well, maybe not quite at the start. still be wondering where, hopefully not wondering where the RB1 is going at that point. Blake Watson.
That would be great. No running back is drafted on day 2. Oh, people will be sweating.
Well, no, I'm saying I think the RB1 in the class is Blake Watson, but he might not actually go in the first 2 days. So. Hmm. Hot take there from me. Just to end with that. We won the NFL draft DFS contest. I think we know a thing or two about projecting draft capital. But anyway, Andrew, this is awesome. Thank you so much, and thank you, the listeners and viewers. Anything you want to say before we leave?
Just follow me over on the X machine at @AndrewErickson_, and I'm over on Fantasy Pros and Betting Pros.
Awesome. Yeah, appreciate it, Andrew. Jamie, appreciate you in the chat and anyone who's watched or listened. Also appreciate all of you. My name is, once again, Kyle Senra, and next month, don't have the guests lined up yet, but stay tuned to find out who will be the guest during the May episode of Press Coverage in due time. Okay, and yeah, one last comment from Jamie says, awesome show. Thanks, Kyle. Thanks, Andrew. Thank you, Jamie. Thank you, Andrew. And enjoy, everyone. Have a good night, and thank you all for watching another episode of Press Coverage.